Thanks for listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR.org. The following show was broadcast on March 16, 2016, and begins in progress during the news segment.
Consume unpasteurized milk. West Virginia Senator and bill sponsor Robert Carnes brought the milk in question into the Capitol building to share with fellow delegates, including Senator Pat McGeehan, who appeared on a Charleston news segment to describe his ailment. According to the Charleston Health Department and health departments yesterday, and health departments nationwide, quote, raw milk can contain dangerous bacteria and parasites, end quote. While Senator McGeehan denies that his troubles are milk-related, public health officials are currently investigating the origin of the illness plaguing the group of senators.
Jeannie, are you telling me that in West Virginia, a group of state senators who were backing a bill to make raw milk legal shared the raw milk at the event and they got sick?
Absolutely, yes.
Interesting.
And one guy, they interviewed one of the senators who was on a laying flat out on a chaise lounge. He had only taken one sip of a cup of raw milk and dumped out the rest. He was just being polite.
Oh, geez. I shouldn't laugh, but I can't help but chuckle at this story.
I don't think anybody is deathly ill, although the CDC has found that unpasteurized milk has been correlated with a lot of illness nationwide, including hospitalization, compared to pasteurized milk.
Gotcha. Okay, well, so much for milk.
Yeah. Well, no, we have more milk.
Oh, good.
In a related story, a trio of vegan bioengineers are in the process of perfecting Moo-Free, the first animal-free milk made from yeast cultures.
Hey, Jeannie, how do you spell Moo-Free?
M-U-U-F-R-I.
Gotcha.
Moo-Free founders Perumal Gandhi, Isha Datar, and Ryan Pandia say that they're trying to address three major issues with milk from commercial dairy farming. Contamination from cows, inhumane treatment of the animals at tightly packed industrial farms, and greenhouse gas emissions from large-scale operations. Once it hits large-scale production, Moo-Free would join a bevy of other non-dairy milks currently revolutionizing the milk market.
So these three vegan bioengineers, they're trying to produce actual milk that's, it's not from a cow, but it's the same chemical molecular structure as milk.
What they're doing is they're using the yeast to produce milk proteins, and mm-hmm. then they're adding in other comparable fats from the plant kingdom and figuring out a sugar to replace the lactose. And the combination, they want it to taste and behave chemically like milk.
Right.
So it's a little different from plant-based milks.
You know what's interesting? I was looking at, I read a story about this. It was on a pro-ag website, and it talked about this milk, and there was a big disclaimer. It said, don't worry, these three bioengineers are pro-farm. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, they're not divorcing themselves from agriculture. They're just divorcing themselves, separating themselves from animal agriculture.
Right. I think that was misleading to say that they're pro-farm, especially on a website that was devoted to dairy production.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
What else do we have, Jeannie?
Our last piece is about tropical fish. National Geographic had a special report that showed an incredible 70 to 90% of the 12.5 million tropical fish that are imported into the U.S. every year are illegally caught using cyanide. According to the report, fish collectors illegally spray sodium cyanide, which is a highly toxic chemical compound, on fish, coral reefs, and other marine life in the vicinity to stun the target fish so that they can easily be collected. Once the fish are squirted with cyanide, the fish lose all respiratory activity and fall unconscious. When they wake up, of course, then they find themselves in a bag or in a container with hundreds of other fish, all of which are clinging to life, and then they are transported thousands of miles across the world, mostly to the United States. The largest exporting countries are the Philippines, Sri Lanka, and Indonesia, all of which have currently outlaw the use of cyanide by commercial fish collectors. But because the local laws are so poorly enforced, and importing countries such as the United States don't test for imported fish and cyanide residue, the practice continues. There's no effective implementation of these laws.
So there are laws to prevent the use of cyanide. Let me just get clear on what's the purpose of the cyanide. So that you want to collect a bunch of tropical fish, and you're in Sri Lanka, and you're underwater, and so rather than having to chase each individual tropical fish with a net, you just spray this cyanide compound, which is a kind of a dangerous compound, and they sort of fall into unconsciousness, and then you collect them. And then when they regain consciousness, they're on their way to the United States.
That is exactly what they do.
This story interests me for a number of reasons, one of which is I recently have been doing some work on the issue of fish pain and fish cognition. There's a new journal that has just come out. It's sponsored by the Humane Society of the United States. This journal is an academic journal, but it's not too academic. It's just that it culls the articles from academics who are specialists in animal cognition or animal ethics.
So when you say academic journal, do you mean it's peer-reviewed so that its findings are checked and rigorously questioned?
Good, thanks. Yeah, it's a peer-review online journal. It's called Animal Sentience. And the journal just started in January, so it's only a few months old. And the very first, the inaugural issue was, this featured article was Fish Do Not Feel Pain. There's a guy down there in Australia who, his name's Brian Key, and he's been arguing that fish don't have the proper physiology to feel pain. And it was a really great, issue because Not only did it feature this article claiming that fish don't feel pain, but it featured a whole slew of rebuttals to the argument that fish don't feel pain from all different people in all different fields, fish experts, biologists, evolutionary biologists, philosophers. And so I actually was honored to be asked to present an article. So one of the articles that I presented was an argument against his argument, saying that fish don't feel pain. Let me give you, so people might think like, I mean, it seems intuitively, if you're not thinking about this in any kind of theoretical way, it seems like fish feel pain. If you thought about a fish, if you took a fish out of water and you started to scale it or something, you might think, yeah, it's probably feeling pain. But the way that these people argue who claim that fish don't feel pain is they do this by looking at the brains of fish.
Oh.
And the brain of fish lacks a cerebral cortex.
Oh, so they're comparing a fish brain to a human brain, and because they're not identical, they're assuming that the perceptions of each animal are not the same.
Exactly. So they're looking at a fish brain, and they're saying, well, humans obviously experience pain, and pain in the human brain takes place in this area, the neocortex, and it requires these fibers, A delta fibers and C fibers. It's all technical stuff. But the point is, the argument is, well, when I look at a fish brain, it doesn't have these kinds of parts, and so it doesn't feel pain. However, this is very controversial because there are a lot of studies that have been done that, behaviorally speaking, it looks like fish experience pain. And I'll give you some examples. One thing they've done back in 2003, a woman named Sneddon and another one named Breathwaite, they took fish and they injected bee venom into the lips of the fish, and they observed the behavior. And
ouch.
Ethically questionable experiment. But when they gave them analgesics, in other words, when they gave them painkillers, like, for example, like an ibuprofen type thing, they noticed that the fish calmed down, the respiration calmed down. So it seemed that painkillers seemed to work on these fish.
Oh, so they have the same chemical pathways that mammalian brains, that human brains do.
Very similar. The inference
would be that they are more similar than different.
Yes.
If these chemicals work on these different parts of the animal kingdom.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
We're looking at sentience at a really basic level, right? It means that the animals evolved these systems for pain reception that are fundamental, and that any evolution past that from some prototype animal, we evolved into separate lines, but we all retain these same roots.
Exactly.
And these roots are these pain and, I assume, pleasure chemical pathways.
Exactly, Jeannie. That's exactly right. Because most biologists, evolutionary biologists, would agree that pain is a very old phenomenon. It goes back millions of years for obvious reasons. It selects for survival. If you're in pain, then there's some kind of tissue damage, and so that can alert you to it. They did another really interesting study. They took a cube, kind of like a little Lego-type cube, and they put it in the fish tank. And so the fish usually, this is what they call a novel object, and usually fish will swim away from a novel object. And you can imagine why they would, because they don't know what it is. But when they inject fish with some kind of acid that causes pain, they notice that the fish don't pay attention to the novel object. And the explanation is that because the fish are in pain, they can't pay attention to the novel object because they're experiencing pain. Just like you and I, right? If you hit your thumb with a hammer and then you're watching your favorite television show, you may just not pay attention to it anymore.
I see.
So anyway, well, look. Here's what I mean, these things with fish pain, people go back and forth. But
it's sort of understandable that we don't understand that fish feel pain or pleasure because they don't have facial expressions, they don't have a voice, they don't even have a body language that we humans are able to understand.
Right.
So it's more the deficit is in the human not to be able to extend our reason to apply it to understanding fish.
I agree. And as I argued in the article in response to this, I said we should employ what's called the precautionary principle, which is basically, since we don't know and there's no consensus, we should treat fish as if they are experiencing pain. And then until we discover otherwise, we shouldn't change our behaviors.
Well, that's great. I'm really glad that this journal, Animal Sentience, decided to focus on fish for its first issue.
Yeah.
Because there are so many fish. If you look at the numbers of relative numbers of animals that are consumed for food, fish far outnumber chickens, which I think are second.
Yes.
So interesting. And so do you think any of this applies to like shellfish, crustaceans like lobsters and things like that? Do you think that this pain and pleasure pathways extend that far back?
Jeannie, I think, you know what? I've written on pain in lobsters too, and that is going to be the subject of a future show because I'm really interested in discussing this question of lobster. When you throw the lobster in the pot and it's boiling, is it experiencing pain? I think I have an answer to that, but that'll be a future
topic. Excellent. Yeah, there's a big difference between vertebrates and invertebrates, where vertebrates have a spinal cord such as fish and mammals and birds.
That's true. Well, thanks, Jeannie. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM Chico and worldwide at kzfr.org. Well, it's time for Jeannie's vegan-friendly food pick of the week. Over to you, Jeannie, in the KZFR Vegan Restaurant Review newsroom.
I am very happy to report from the restaurant newsroom where no fish, no crustaceans, no birds, and no cattle are consumed, or pigs, to report that my vegan-friendly restaurant pick of the week is Ike's Love and Sandwiches, which has the Chico Vegan Facebook group. If you're a member of that, you'll know that it was buzzing with excitement. I posted a picture of their menu board and a sandwich that I got there, and it went crazy. So Ike's, if you don't know it, is a small sandwich chain with a number of locations in the Bay Area and other towns in California. And they have a nice selection of vegetarian sandwiches, which they can easily veganize upon request. They have a little asterisk on their menu, and it says can be veganized. So they have a nice section. I talked to the owner manager. I went in there. I saw this. I saw they were open. I talked to the manager.
Hey, Jeannie, what was the name of the owner manager?
Right. His name is Hollywood, and he was really, really nice. He said he wants Ike's to be the place where everyone, not just meat eaters or vegans, can get something good to eat. Emphasize good.
So, Jeannie, what did you get when you went to Ike's Love and Sandwiches? What did you order?
First of all, let me tell you that I'm all about hot or warm sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
Dry, bready veggie sandwiches that you can get at the places in town are really not much more than a salad in a sandwich, and they don't really inspire me, and they don't really want to make me fork out some money to pay for one. So far, I've had at Ike's, because I've been there a couple times already, I had their fried, breaded vegan chicken sandwich, and their marinara meatball sandwiches are both nice warm sandwiches. They use vegan cheese on it and melt it in. It's really good. Both of them were delicious. On their menu, they also have vegan chicken nuggets, or you can get a vegan hamburger there. It's excellent.
Jeannie, that vegan meatball sandwich, that takes me back to my childhood. My older brother, he was a big fan of meatball sandwiches. So when I was a child, I wanted to be just like him, so I adopted the meatball sandwich as the late night snack. Now what's interesting is both my brother and I are vegetarian, and so I think when next time he comes to visit me in Chico, we're going to head over and try the meatball, vegan meatball sandwich. He'll love that.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah,
so,
no, being vegan is not about
asceticism
or deprivation. It's,
no.
It's great.
So I have a question for you, Jeannie.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the BLT. Do they have a BLT on the menu? That is the question.
Why, yes, they do.
Oh, yeah.
They have a BLT on the menu. I haven't tried it yet, but I would love it if you or one of our non-human radio listeners gives it a try and lets me know what they think. Although I have to say there's a better than even chance that I'll be there before you get there and try it. Anyway, this place really hits my sweet spot for taste, price, and location. It's centrally located. Ike's Leaven Sandwiches is located at 648 West 5th Street in the heart of College Town, which may or may not be your cup of tea, at the corner of 5th and Ivy. Right now, they're open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. And once they get into gear, they will be open longer hours. For now, I think they're a great lunch and light dinner place, especially if you're a college student.
Well, you know what's great about their opening at 5th and Ivy? That is College Central. So I could imagine that there may be some college students who may stumble in there, and who knows, they may encounter some delicious vegan food for the first time and maybe change their lives that way.
So just think of the sorority or fraternity group that goes in, and there's like that one sorority or frat member who's like afraid to talk about how they're trying to change their diet to be vegan.
Yeah.
And they can go there and they can order a vegan chicken sandwich.
Yeah. Okay. Or the BLT or the, okay, well, I'm going to check that out. Well, thanks, Jeannie. So in case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and worldwide at kzfr.org. Well, it's that time again. Time for the Non-Human Radio weekly calendar of events. Back over to you, Jeannie, in the KZFR Vegan Calendar of Events room.
We just call it the calendar room.
Okay.
So I'm always surprised. Chico's a pretty small town, but we do usually have quite a few vegan events to announce. So I'm going to run through them quickly.
Great.
And just beware, I'll post the show notes. In the show notes, I'll post a link or more info on all the events here. And those will be posted at nonhumanradio.com.
And, Gina, we can also post a link to Animal Sentience to the journal there, too, can't we?
Yes, I post a recap of all the news items plus relevant reading links. So
excellent.
If you want to read about Moofree, there'll be a link for that. If
Great.
You want to read about the poor senators falling ill from raw milk, that'll be there too.
Great, thanks.
So there are two events on March 19th, which is a Saturday. The Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals is holding a class on Sri Lankan vegan cuisine. These classes, it's a whole part of a series of classes. The classes are beginner-friendly and require a small admission fee to cover materials. The classes will be held at the Sky Creek Dharma Center in North Chico, and the registration link will be posted with the show notes.
Jeannie, who, by any chance, do you know who is going to be giving those classes?
Oh, a really nice lady named Lakshmi Ariyatnam, and she's from Sri Lanka, and she's just a pleasure to deal with, to speak to, and I think everyone will enjoy being in the class.
Great. Go Lakshmi.
They're also planning to organize a field trip to go up to Yuba City to go buy ingredients for, to go eat lunch and then go buy ingredients for another meal.
Fun. Okay. Yeah.
Also on March 19th is the 5th Annual Conscious Eating Conference in Berkeley. I know we've mentioned this a couple times, but I really think it's going to be worthwhile attending. The conference is organized by the Berkeley Organization for Animal Advocacy and United Poultry Concerns, which is an animal advocacy group working on behalf of the 9 billion chickens slaughtered every year in the U.S. Speakers include Patrice Jones from the Vine Sanctuary, Hope Bohannock, author of The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There a Happy Meat? And our own non-human radio host, Robert Jones, who will be speaking on how not to be vegan. Do you want to mention anything about that?
Hopefully people will be interested because, of course, it sounds like I'm saying how not to be vegan means don't be a vegan, but it's not that at all. I'm going to just talk about different kinds of ways that people can be vegan, and I'm going to give my own opinion on that.
Excellent. So following that, next week from March 21st through March 23rd, Animal Place, which is an animal advocacy group out of Nevada County, Grass Valley, will be holding their Brave the Cage event at Chico State. Visitors will be invited to experience firsthand living as a battery chicken by standing in a human-sized battery egg cage for 1 hour. Email info@animalplace.org for more information.
And next week on this very show, Jeannie, Stephanie Bain, campaign coordinator for Animal Place's Brave the Cage College Tour, will be our guest here on Non-Human Radio. She will be in the studio. That's next Wednesday, March 23rd, and that's the final day of the Brave the Cage tour at Chico State. So we're looking forward to that.
Excellent. Yeah, she's been all over the state with that exhibition.
Awesome.
So. The next event is the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series, known as CARES, which will meet on Tuesday night, March 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Woodstock Pizza, which is at 365 East 6th Street in Chico. The reading for the month will be an excerpt from Lori Gruen's new book, Entangled Empathy. All members of the community, vegans and meat eaters alike, are welcome to attend. CARES is one of the many valuable community programs supported by the Chico Peace and Justice Center, and a link to the article and will be posted in the show notes.
Jeannie, can I mention some things there?
Yes, please.
So that, the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series, or otherwise known as CARES, that's an organization that you and I are a part of, and we are partnered with the Chico Peace and Justice Center. Woodstock's Pizza, we have it there at Woodstock's Pizza. I believe one of the reasons we have it there is because they offer vegan pizza.
They do. They offer vegan pizza. All their crusts are vegan, which is amazing, even their gluten-free crust.
So we have our reading group meeting, and the last time we had a reading group there, it was packed, right? We had about, I mean, the restaurant was packed, but our reading group, we had about over a dozen people.
That is correct. It was a good discussion, and a lot of people came and learned about animal rights issues from a philosophical standpoint, which is important. It's one thing to know all the facts, but these readings are more designed for animal rights and more foundational reasoning underlying animal rights issues.
Now, what's interesting about this week's particular reading, and I'm hoping that people will come out for this, and as you said, you've posted the reading on our website, or link to it. You know, Lori Gruen, she's a longtime animal rights activist and ecofeminist, and she's one of the founding members, I believe, of PETA, or she was there at the founding of PETA back in the 70s. And her new book is getting, you know, rave reviews all over, because one of the things I think is interesting is, you know, a lot of us who are in the animal rights movement or vegans, we know about Peter Singer and animal liberation, and that's sort of the kinds of arguments that we think about, decreasing suffering. But Lori Gruen, in this book, she's going to argue that those kinds of suffering arguments, they're not really, they don't go far enough, and they're kind of impoverished. What we need is, we need a return and a back and an appeal to empathy. And so she's going to actually argue that using empathy instead of this kind of rational, utilitarian, Singer, suffering, she's going to argue that the real way to go if you're an animal rights advocate is to go the empathy route. So hopefully, I mean, it's going to be, you know, there'll be some sparks flying, because there are a lot of Peter Singer lovers that might disagree with her. So hopefully we can get people to show up.
I think the more approaches that we have in our toolkit as animal advocates, the better. So strictly logic maybe doesn't cut it for everyone, so it's great to be able to add empathy.
Great.
The final event, always a fun one, is the Chico Vegan Potluck, which is coming up on Saturday, March 26th at 6 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room. The theme for this month's event is Foods from Your Family Tree, Real or Imagined. So you just bring a delicious homemade or store-bought 100% plant-based dish and join 30 or more of the nicest vegans you'd ever want to meet for a hearty meal and good conversation. Potluck details can be found at chicovegan.com or in the show notes.
Well, thanks, Jeannie. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time for this week's show, but not before our animal rights thought, subversive thought of the week. Jeannie.
Our animal rights subversive thought of the week comes from the activist, scholar, and author Angela Davis, who writes, quote, "I am no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I am changing the things I cannot accept."
That's great. It's tremendous. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to our engineer and friend, Sarah Downs.
Yay! This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are entirely those of the hosts and do not in any way reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or just want to listen again or have your friends and family listen, visit us online at nonhumanradio.com and be sure to stay tuned for The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand. And until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan!